Welcome to the Strong for Performance podcast, where we give coaches and consultants practical ideas for taking you to the next level in your business and in your life. I'm your host, Meredith Bell. I interview experts who've walked in your shoes and offer real-world experience that you can apply to your own journey. Welcome to another episode of the Strong for Performance podcast. I'm your host, Meredith Bell, and today I want to welcome as my very special guest, Maya Huchan. Maya, welcome to the show.
Hi, Meredith. Thank you for having me.
Well, I am so excited about having Maya here because she has just written a very important new book. And Maya and I met a few years ago and have become close friends in addition to being good colleagues. So this is a special opportunity for me to just really share some great and important information with you, my audience. What I want to do first, though, is tell you a little bit about Maya because her credentials are very impressive. She's a globally recognized speaker, author, and Master Certified Executive Coach. In fact, Maya was one of the founding members of the Marshall Goldsmith Group. She and Marshall are good friends. In fact, you've been called the female Marshall Goldsmith when you've presented, haven't you?
Yes, a few people have called me that. it's an honor.
Yes, that's wonderful. And also, Maya specializes in diversity and inclusion, as well as cross-cultural management, because originally, I believe you're from Taiwan, right?
Correct. Yes,
and so having that understanding of a very different culture, but having been in the United States now for more than 30 years, it's really, you've got this unique understanding of those cultures, and then in your work around the globe, so many others. And one of the things that's a very impressive statistic that I've never had any other guest be able to give me a statistic like this is that more than 70% of Maya's coaching clients get promoted during or soon after their coaching engagement with her. So congratulations on that. That, of course, speaks so much to the results that you help your clients get and the transformations you help them go through. So all of that to say, Maya is highly qualified to talk about what she's going to be discussing today, which is amazing content from her brand new book called Saving Face: How to Preserve Dignity and Build Trust. And Maya, I love the title. I love the topic. I think people have heard the term, you know, saving face, and it's going to be really fascinating to explore that with you today. But before we delve into the book, let's back up, and I would love for you to share a little bit about your journey in creating this book. What was your why or purpose in writing it?
Yeah, you know, Meredith, this has been a long journey for me. And as you mentioned, that I grew up in Taiwan. I was born and raised in Taipei, Taiwan. So I grew up in Asian culture. And face is a concept that we live with. It permeates every interaction that people have, whether it's a social setting or business setting. And so it's like fish in the water that, you know, you don't think about it because it's part of your culture. Mm-hmm. But then after I moved to the US and work with leaders around the world in the last 20 plus years, that it became so clear to me that the concept of face, it really become, it's a critical element for leadership success. And this concept that I have shared with leaders at all levels in many different industries and in various functions. And many, many times the leaders have realized that so many challenges, the disappointments, the frustrations, or the pain point that they have experienced in their leadership journey, when they look deeper, when they hear this term that says it's not about the money, and the real issue is often about face. And then so this is so essential for leadership, but it's also at times counterintuitive for many leaders. And so this became something that I was fascinated about, and I became so much more aware. And so that triggered the thought about, I have to write a book about it. And this is not something that just for leaders. Of course, my primary audience for this book, I'm talking about leadership. So it's for business leaders, executives, entrepreneurs, and also professionals. But my hope is that this book will also benefit from anyone that who wanted to build more authentic and genuine empathetic relationship and have a positive long-lasting relationship with other people, that this will also help them improve their skill set and also their relationship in all aspects of lives. So that's really my hope, and that's the why that I wrote this book. And it took a long time to really put this all together, but I'm really hoping that this will be helpful to my readers.
Well, you know, Maya, it's obvious to me, since I was able to read a preview copy of it, the passion and the heart and the depth of caring that you put into the book, both with the concepts you present, the models, but also the stories you tell. And to me, those are very compelling. They bring to life these concepts. And I'm excited about having you share some of those stories as we talk about the different aspects of FACE that you cover in your book. So I just want to thank you for writing it, because I think it's an important message that, and I agree with you, I think every person in an organization can benefit from understanding how they can apply this idea of saving face with others. So in the preface, I wanted to just read this sentence because I thought it just resonated with me so much. You said, building authentic and lasting human relations may be the most important calling for leaders in this century. And I just went, yes, when I read that. And so I just like to hear your perspective. What is it that makes that particular ability to build authentic and lasting human relationships, why is that so critical at this time?
Yeah, you know, in my working as executive coach and leadership consultant with leaders around the world, that what I have discovered is that the leaders are working today more and more with diverse populations. So they have to work across geography, across time zones, and they also have to work with people from different gender, different cultural backgrounds, different generations, and also just different thinking style and different personalities. So, you know, leaders must be able to think in many different ways, and then to be able to move in different circles. And they have to be more aware of the human differences so then they can be effective in engaging and connecting with people that they work with. So to be able to manage this diversity, that they must be able to have this very special ability to tune in with those human differences. And then so that be aware of the concept of face is really going to be crucial. And, you know, on top of the diversity, the factor that leaders have to deal with, that we all know that during this very challenging time of the virus, that everybody's working from home. So all of a sudden, the leaders have to deal with not only the work at hand, but they also have to start managing remote teams. And managing remote teams using technology to communicate, to engage, to get things done is quite challenging for many leaders, particularly for leaders who are not used to doing so. So that to be able to have that awareness of how do I come across, how do I show up as a leader? And the people are quiet, are silent on the phone in my team meetings. What does that mean? Are they engaged? Do they have any questions? And what are they thinking? What is their state of mind? And then so the managing virtually is something that leaders have to with in this very challenging time. And that's why that to be able to stay connected and then to have this very high awareness of the concept of face with them. And top of that, we are using social media all the time. So this is the third factor, is that where it's so easy for us to post a comment and that unintentionally that we alienate people, we can offend people or even insult someone we don't even know that impact is happening. And so, you know, let me give you an example of someone that recently, Linda, let's just call her Linda, that she works for a software company. And she worked with people all over the world, and she communicate primarily using this platform called Slack. I think that a lot of us are using it. Now, so she used Slack to communicate with her team, even with somebody sitting right next to her. So all day long, she would communicate, providing feedback and sharing information and give updates. And then, but then as the team leader, that she pride herself of being highly effective and very efficient, and also being brutally honest about what needs to be done. And then so she shared feedback with the whole team. Sometimes specifically for any particular individual, she will post the feedback online. And so everybody can read those comments. And the person that received the feedback often feel humiliated, embarrassed, and over time, and then the rest of the team member read those comments, are also feel bad for that person. And not only feeling bad for that person, they started thinking about, well, do I want to be in that position? No. So I'm not going to stick my neck out or try anything risky or share my opinions or my ideas, because I may get, you know, I may get those same kind of feedback online and everybody's going to look at it and laugh at me. So over time, unintentionally, she had created a fear-based culture of her team, and she was not even aware of it. But then what she had experienced was some of the impact. People are disengaged. They stop sharing ideas. They become very quiet at the team meetings, and they stop helping each other. And they also, the productivity start to decrease and even diminished. She really didn't know what was going on. Well, what just happened? You know, over a short period of time, the team has become disengaged. So then when we started working together, that very quickly that we realized that after the 360 interview, that we identified those are the critical factor. And I worked with her and coached her to really change the way that she managed her team. So then she was very consistently, very quickly changed the way she managed, sharing information, sharing feedback offline when it's critical, and then provide positive feedback online. And so it really transformed the way she leads by being more mindful and more intentional with her actions. She had the best intention, but then her impact could be very negative because she didn't really pay attention to the concept of face. And then so she instead started rebuilding that face, and things got better after 6 months.
That's a great story and a great lead-in too to this whole idea of what you mean by face, because you talk about three different aspects of it. And so you just covered, I think, all three there. So why don't you describe what each of those is and how that works in terms of, you know, for or against the person who is using them?
Yes. So what is face? Maybe it would be helpful. Let me first define face. So face presents one's self-esteem, self-worth, identity, your reputation, pride, and dignity. So really it's about your whole person, okay? And so there are three key concepts of face. Honoring face, losing face, and saving face. So let me explain what they are. So honoring face is essentially taking actions to show respect, show appreciation, admiration, and grant dignity to others. Okay, so then when you think about giving face or honoring face, that there are many very simple ways you can do that. And many of us are probably already doing it, and we probably don't even realize that we're honoring the other person. So for example, that we ask someone for their input, and we give credit to our team members for a project that's well done. We express appreciation to others, and we empathize. We listen to them and understand their challenges. And we acknowledge people's input. And also we invite people to give their voice, and then to in the discussion, and we give people, everybody, their voice equal time and weight. Okay, this list can go on and on, but those are some of the very simple ways that leaders can honor face for people. Okay, now, so essentially you're sending a message to people that I see you, I hear you, and I respect you. Okay, now, so the second concept about face is you want to avoid causing somebody to lose face. So Chinese proverb, that is something that I have heard, it's 1,000 years old. There is a Chinese proverb. It says, spilled water is hard to regain. Okay, so just imagine that you accidentally knock off a glass of water on the table, and it is spilled all over the floor. Now, if you try to get it all the water back in the glass, it's nearly impossible, right? And then even if you get some back in your glass, do you really want to drink it? Yuck, probably not, right? So the saying, spilled water is hard to regain, really it's a way of saying that if you have said or done something to provoke shame, fear, guilt, or vulnerability in others, and it's like you spilled a glass of water, it's a damage is done. It's very difficult to repair. Okay, so in those kind of negative feelings that we created, sometimes it's unintentional. In fact, a lot of times that we cause somebody to lose face, we don't even know it. So give you some quick examples. Like the example that we shared about Linda, that she was giving negative feedback on Slack and not thinking about somebody it would lose face and lose motivation, but rather in her mind, she was thinking, I gotta fix this problem quickly. This is the easiest way to fix it. Okay, what's the big deal? That's just, you know, I'm just gonna type it and hit send. So that's when we can cause somebody to lose face unintentionally and then have a much bigger damage that for you to repair. And you can also fail to acknowledge somebody's contribution, and or sometimes can be insensitive jokes that you're telling or making some comments that may actually create very ill feelings on someone and create make people feel excluded. So those type of behaviors can cause somebody to lose face and we don't even know it. And so that's one thing I think that I often advise leader is that we want to imagine that you have an antenna in your head, that when we, you know, in the old days when we listened to the radio, right? When the antenna is down, what do we see? We hear. We hear a lot of static. It's not clear with the music or the speaking. Now, if we raise our antenna, then all of a sudden we can hear much more clearly, And because we have been, we're able to receive all the different signals. And so that's what I'm talking about, is that when we are, when we can't go on autopilot all the time. As a leader, we have to be able to raise our antenna and then to be mindful about what we say, how we do it, and how we show up, so that we can actually avoid causing somebody to lose face. And then if you actually, by accident or mistakenly, cause somebody to lose face, that you can still fix it by saving face. So saving face is the third concept. Saving face is the authentic and intentional act of turning around a potentially negative situation to preserve dignity for all parties involved for a positive outcome. And then so my book has a lot of examples and tools to show you how to do it.
That's great. I really like the way you break those down, because I think everyone can identify with times themselves when somebody has honored their face. Other times we remember very easily when somebody caused us to lose face, and then saving face, yes. You know, when somebody could have said or done something but chose not to, maybe when we made a mistake. So I really like those three distinctions that you have there. There was another term that you used when you were talking about using face as social currency. So how does that work?
So face is the new social currency in our time. Now imagine that how we build a supply of face with someone by continuously making deposit into the bank of face. Okay, so of course that, you know, the more face you have, the easier and the faster you can get things done. So imagining that, you know, how you continuously making deposit when you are building relationship with the people you work with, or with people you come in contact with, that you build trust, you show up consistently, and you do what you say you're gonna do, you deliver, and you express gratitude and appreciation. And we compliment people, we recognize them for their contributions, both in public and private, or we empathize. You know, we're putting ourselves in their shoes and to understand their challenges, and we think before we speak, okay? And we give people benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. Those are different ways that we can, it's like making deposit into this bank account of face, that over time, people see that you are somebody that they can trust and you have their back. And because you are continuous deposit of this face, that you have built a solid foundation for your relationship. Now, so, you know, if you think about when you are in a long-term relationship, somebody that you have known for a long time, somebody you trust and admire, that if they accidentally did something or said something that could be offensive, that we forgive them. We say, oh, you know, he didn't mean that, or she didn't mean that. Or I know this person, right? And so the same concept, when we need to make a withdrawal, for example, if we need to give somebody a negative feedback, or that, and you know, or we may have to do something that that is not that can consider a negative action that can negatively impact somebody, that we provide that. So because we already have that solid foundation of the bank account, we have built it up, so that even if we mistakenly cause them to lose face, or perhaps has a negative impact, the relationship can still be sustained or saved because we have enough deposit to cover the withdrawal. So that's why I like to use the social currency as a metaphor to think about using face as a social currency when we build that relationship. Mm-hmm. Is that we continue to make that deposit, and hopefully we never have to withdraw. But if we do, that we know that it's solid relationship, that we're still going to be okay.
Yes. Well, it's so true because we're all human and we will inevitably say something or do something we didn't intend in any way to be offensive to the other person. And so it makes perfect sense that, in fact, you may save them. That's kind of funny. Save them from losing face because they trust you so much that they know you would not intentionally inflict harm or pain on them to have that happen. And I'm guessing that the other upside of having made those deposits is that if they do get offended or hurt, it's short-lived because of the deposits, the balance you already have with that person. So thinking about it in terms of practical application and leaders, what could they do to ensure that they build and save trust with people on their team and throughout their organization with everyone else?
Yes, great question. So now from a leadership perspective, that, you know, leaders, we have to manage such a complexity in our work in today's business environment. So now a lot of times that the challenges can be things like, you know, that people may misunderstand each other, or that that there's people have a different negative emotions when they experience failures or burned out. And then so when leaders experience those type of things, that we wanted to actually step back and then think about and listen carefully to see what's really happening here, you know. And your employees or your team members may not actually say something like, oh, I lost face at work. They may not use those words, right? No. They may say something like, you know, my boss doesn't really appreciate what I do. Or, you know, people don't take my ideas seriously. I don't feel heard. Or they may say, I don't feel like I belong. Or I've been working so hard but I've been passed over for promotions multiple times. When you hear those expressions, when you hear those words, that you want to step back and say, what's really going on here, right? And when we think about leaders, how can we really continue to engage our team and then to pay attention to what's happening? How do we engage them and provide encouragement and also empowerment? Is to think about, you know, it's almost like we're driving in a car. It's not our daily commute that we're talking about as we work with people from diverse backgrounds. We have to think about, it's almost like we're driving in a foreign country, okay? And we don't know where we're going, and we have no idea where the destination look like. And I don't even have a GPS. So what do I do, right? And so as a leader, we have to turn off that autopilot and then start paying attention and thinking about, well, what are some, paying attention to what is happening with my team and checking with them. And so I like to kind of often suggest the leaders, particularly leaders who are working very result-oriented and very analytical and number-driven, data-driven leaders, and they're highly successful in doing what they do to deliver numbers. And I've worked with lots of leaders with that type of competencies. Those are their strengths. Mm-hmm. But then they're so strong in using their left brain that very often when they think about, oh, being emotionally sensitive, or I need to check in with people to see how they're feeling, that's the right brain stuff that you often think that's that as a weakness. But then a truly successful leader, they use both left brain and right brain, okay? And then when they are able to balance those two type of a leadership approach, then they tend to be much more successful and they come across as more empathetic yet highly effective. Let me give you an example of this client that he actually recently reached an email to a team member that's a virtual team member. This team member happened to be in a different country, and English is not his native language. So this leader wrote the email and said, well, I would like you to deliver this task by a certain day. And he sent this message out, and then he received the message email reply later and says two words on the email, no way. He was more than shocked. He was angry. he was thinking, what kind of email is that? How rude that you would tell me I'm your boss. How can you reply no way, you know, and without any explanation? So he started reply writing a very angry email. He was frustrated. He was, you know, this email was obviously, you know, an angry email. And then so after I finished the email, before he hit send, he actually paused and then say he read the email one more time. And then he thought, wow, this is not a nice email. And he thought, I've worked with the team member, this person, for almost a year. And it's always been very responsible, respectful, and hardworking. So this is not a typical behavior. And I wonder why email saying no way. You know what, instead of sending this email back, I'm gonna pick up a phone and talk to him and ask him what's going on. So he did not send that email. He picked up a phone and called. When he called this team member, he asked, what happened to this email that I sent you and you say no way? And then this team member was very apologetic, and he explained that the same week that the boss gave him the deadline, he had two other deadlines that same week. And then he went out and explained in more detail about what the other two commitments. He will also damage the relationship. And the employee may shut down and not knowing that how to deal with it. So it's something that I think as a leader, we need to be mindful and intentional about our actions. And going back to you think before you act. And then don't go on autopilot.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's such a powerful story. There are so many times I'm sure our listeners have had where they may have fired off an angry response without taking that pause that you were just describing, and then regretted it once they found out the full facts of the situation. You know, both of those stories with Linda that relied on Slack and this other manager, they both speak to the benefit of having a real conversation with someone versus relying on an online platform or email that's less personal. And there are all these nuances that you can't pick up. You can read into things very differently, and you can't check it in an email versus in a phone call. You're able to ask follow-up questions, clarify. So those are some great examples. I was just going to ask you too, if there were any other stories from your book that illustrate either the saving, you know, or the losing, or the honoring of face, that would be good examples for our listeners to get a clearer picture of what those mean.
You know, one of my favorite stories was shared by a client of mine. And this happened to his boss. So let's just call this person Jeff. Jeff is a financial director, and he of a multinational company. So Jeff was actually facing a big crisis in his career. Under his watch, a frontline employee had stolen over $100,000 that 8 month period of time. And as a financial director, Jeff had designed and deployed this entire cash flow process that allowed this employee to commit this fraud undetected. So it was a high profile case, and was discussed not only at the security meetings, but also was quickly throughout the company was spread out. Everybody knows. Everybody's whispering about this. Mm. And so when Jeff, the financial director, felt entirely responsible and personally victimized. And it was a good example of losing face. He was humiliated. He felt terrible. So soon, this company's COO planned a meeting with Jeff and his team. And COO had to fly in from Germany. So the stress really consumed Jeff. Just anticipating of this upcoming meeting, he lost weight, he couldn't sleep. The worst part was he actually developed this rash all over his face. So everybody could see that he was so stressed out. And for days, Jeff felt like a dead man walking. Right? And perhaps made even worse was that he didn't know the COO very well, that he knew that there is a reputation of the COO as being very stern and businesslike. So when the day arrived, the whole team waited nervously in a conference room for the COO to arrive. And the COO walked in and he sat down and he broke the tension with one sentence. He said, "I don't care about the theft." He said, "The theft is unavoidable. Whether you're running a hot dog stand or a multinational company, the company was insured and we would be made whole." And the COO continued, "I only want to know that you plan to review the process and fix it. And you seem well on your way from what I can see." That's what he said. Mm-hmm. And then you could see that Jeff's demeanor immediately brightened. And the rest of the meeting, everybody was focusing on problem solving, focusing on the process. And Jeff was able to provide some very concrete steps that he already took to fix the problem. And then he returned to his job with renewed energy. The COO had saved his face. Okay. So let's think about how did the COO do it? Okay. And number one is that he created psychological safety that while holding Jeff accountable. Okay. He was kind, but firm, right? And he was very straightforward to deliver the message. He chose his words very carefully. And then he showed humility and also emotional intelligence when dealing with a very delicate situation. And he helped Jeff overcome the shame and embarrassment very quickly and redirect him to focus on solving the problem and moving forward. So he sent a very clear message to Jeff and also the whole team. "I trust you. I have confidence in you to do the right thing."
Mm. Yeah, that's a very powerful example to me. Just the emotional intelligence, just the strength of leadership that in the empathy that he understood what Jeff was experiencing without even having seen him, just recognizing, if I were in that position, what thoughts would I be having? And so he went in there to reassure him about all of those. It was just such an amazing exhibition of someone who had lost face in such a dramatic way, having it honored and saved in a setting like that. That's just very, very powerful.
Yes, absolutely.
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
So that was really my favorite story. And as I think about a good example of somebody that, to be able to intentionally and authentically saving face for somebody, but still hold the person accountable, that was a great example.
Yes. And I think that's a key. What you're advocating is not to be soft or overlook issues. It's how you go about addressing those.
Yes.
That makes all the difference. And you created this model with AAA, AAA. And I know that's an acronym. Talk a little bit about what each of the A's stand for.
Yes. So the AAA model, each A stands for a different word, and it's how we manage to honor face, to avoid causing anybody to lose face, and also how can we effectively save face. So the triple A model, the first A stands for aware. So be aware of your own assumptions, behaviors, and your own bias. Okay, so that awareness is such a crucial element, is that, like we talk about, raise your human antenna. So pay attention to what's really happening, where are you coming from, okay? And then be careful about not making any assumptions before you take your action. So that's the first A, aware. Now the second A is acquire. So that once you have that awareness of where you're coming from, then you seek to understand the other person's frame of reference and put yourself in the other person's shoes, understand what their intentions are and what they're going through and their challenges. So acquire is asking questions and understand what's happening. And then once you have that information, that data, that facts, then the third A is adapt. So then you adapt your behaviors, you take thoughtful actions to produce positive outcome for everyone involved. So those are the three steps. It's very easy to remember. And I think that, but it's also something that takes some discipline to implement. It's aware, acquire, and adapt. Mm-hmm. That's something that I have used it personally. And also I have, many of my clients have tried it, and it really helps. I have another funny story if I may share.
Sure, go ahead.
So one of my, I'm working with the executive team of a multinational company. And one of the new team member is actually from an Asian cultural background. And then so in a very early stage, when the team are all working together, and then during a social situation, they're having dinner, and this Asian person said to the Australian peer that, you're old and you're also getting fat. And so everybody else was terrified when they heard that. And then there's so many things going through their head, but everybody freeze because they don't know how to react to that. They thought, how could you say something so insensitive? And so afterwards, people were trying to figure out, well, what's wrong with this person and how can we fix this problem? How can we correct this so we don't create conflict when this new team is working together? And so the first thing is that, so they, as I was coaching this team, and then we applied the triple A model. Number one is that let's first be aware of our own cultural assumption. And it's that in the Western culture, whether it's Americans or Australian or British, we assume that calling somebody old and fat is a very bad thing. It's disrespectful and it's rude. So that's our own belief and assumption. Right? So we're aware of that. And also another awareness is that we're all offended because we associate those old and fat as negative. Now, acquire is the next step. So I asked them to actually take a step to ask this person, why did she make that comment? Where is she coming from? And then so they did. They thought, let's find out. And rather than assume they know the answer, they ask her. So then she said, in Asian culture, that when we call somebody old, it really is a sin because we respect seniority. And then so when somebody's older, automatically we grant them more respect. So then I actually really respect this person. And so that's why I called it that older person is wiser. And so it's a good way for me to express my respect. And then calling somebody fat, I actually didn't use the word fat. I would say you've gained some weight. And then so you're glowing, you're looking healthy and strong and vibrant. So that was a good thing. And as once they understood where she was coming from, and they had such a light bulb goes off and then says, wow, what a difference it makes just by asking and acquire that additional information, and then rather than assume the ill intention. So then they adapt. What they did was that they adapt the new way of working with each other cross-culturally, is to ask questions and then to be more aware, and then so that we don't automatically draw the wrong conclusion. And so the team is working really well together. And then they thought about that incident, and everybody is a good, give them an all big laugh.
It is interesting, the change in perspective that you have once you do take the time to, I love that middle step, acquire, where you're really inquiring too.
Yes.
You're getting past your perceptions, your assumptions about what the person meant, to really explore that. And so the word that just came to mind, Maya, as I was listening to your AAA, is neutral. You stay neutral, so you don't assign a meaning to someone's intent, good or bad, related to what they're saying, but instead to pause and explore that whole willingness to acquire new information. So then you can adapt. And to me, adapt also means you adapt your perceptions.
Yes.
Because you've had your eyes opened up. And I think giving people the benefit of the doubt and not assuming the worst, it, to me, it's all beautifully related to your whole, you know, concept of face. And how can I save face for this, with this person, as I explore what they meant?
Yes.
By something, and not jump to feeling offended on behalf of someone else when no ill intent was ever, you know, intended there. So I love that story. That is great, great story to end with, and just kind of pull the interview together, because we are really at time. I just want to encourage people to get your book, and not just read it, but to apply what you're teaching there, because we really only had time to touch, you know, on a few key things. And there's so much depth and caring and wisdom that you've built into your book because of all your years of experience working with people at so many different levels, different size organizations, and different cultures. So I just want to highly recommend that people get Saving Face, and also tell us where people can connect with you, get your book, and learn more about the work that you do and the services you offer.
Sure. The easiest way to connect with me is just to go to my website. The website is my name. So it's www.mayahuchan.com. It's spelled MayaHuchan.com. And the book is available on Amazon for pre-order. And you can just type in the title of the book, Amazon. You can pre-order right now. And the book will actually be released on June 9th.
Great. Well, when this goes live, it should be out there and available for everyone. And I highly recommend folks picking up a copy of Saving Face. And Maya, we'll have that on the show notes page also, your website, as well as the link to your book on Amazon. So
thank you
so much for being with me today. It was such a pleasure to get to talk to you about this. And it's such an important topic, really critical. Circling back to your preface, this thing of building, you know, very strong relationships is key. And face is a key component of that. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to the Strong for Performance podcast. Now head over to growstrongleaders.com to learn how our tools can increase your impact with clients and expand your business. And while you're there, grab our free ebook, The 5 Secrets to Getting Better at Anything. Until next time, I'm Meredith Bell. Make it a great day.